You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Leonard Lopate. Claire Balding is an award-winning British broadcaster and writer who has been the face of the BBC's horse racing coverage since 1998. She's also been described in the English press as a national treasure following her coverage of the London Olympic Games in 2012. She's also being honored with a special BAFTA award for her coverage of the Olympics and Paralympics. And as an openly gay female sports journalist, Ms. Balden is no stranger to adversity. In her new memoir, My Family, My Animals and Other Family, she tells how a childhood spent in a most unusual household with more than 100 thoroughbred racehorses and an ever-present pack of dogs helped to teach her life's toughest lessons. It's published by the Penguin Press, and Claire Balding joins us now. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you very much.
I want to ask you first, as an openly gay broadcaster, sports journalist, we've had the headlines in the U.S. this week about Jason Collins coming out,
yes.
And a big conversation about that. You chose to focus your book on growing up, and it ends at about the time that you're a late teenager and doesn't go into, you talk about your partner at length in the epilogue, but you don't focus on that. Why did you make that choice?
And I also, I have a paragraph in there where I just basically touch on it saying I'd taken a lot of books out of the library, which I had, as it were, metaphorically speaking, and then I realized I was looking in the wrong section of the library. So I'd had a lot of boyfriends.
I thought that was very graceful.
Thank you. My father liked that too. He said, how elegant. I wanted to write a childhood memoir, but I didn't want to write an autobiography. I'm only 42. I just don't think. I think you need perspective on your life to be able to write about it clearly and understand why things happen and the consequences of what happened. And actually, I wanted to write something that was, in a way, I kid myself that this book isn't really about me, it's about the animals. Because that's my. I just don't have. I just don't have enough interest in myself to write an autobiography. So that's why. And I kind of. I wanted to write something that would make you laugh and make you cry and understand a bit more about how I, the rather eccentric rural English lifestyle that I was a part of. I didn't want to do the big open my heart and tell you everything about me. One day I might, but I think I need another 10 years to think about it.
We do certainly learn a lot about your family and the family dynamics, but when you look at the book, you open it up and the list of chapters is all a different name of an animal. So my first thought looking at the names, is Knock Knock, is that the chapter with the hardest knocks in her life? Is that the low point? Is Respectable Jones at the end, the time of self-acceptance? But my favorite chapter was the chapter about Frank.
Oh, Frank.
The pony. Tell me about Frank.
And probably you thought this is where she's really honest. The chapter on Frank. No, it's about a pony. Frank was the one. Frank was the one who understood me. And I genuinely think that if you've grown up as a child, if you're lucky enough to grow up with animals around you and you connect with animals, your first real love will tend to be either your dog or your pony or your cat or your goldfish or your guinea pig, because you're connecting in a way that it's you're not going to do with your parents in the same way. You know, I loved Frank. I really loved him. And he was the ugliest pony you've ever seen. And to me, I thought he was just handsome as anything. He had splodges. He was grey, but he was kind of mucky grey colour with splodges on his neck. And he had bad sweet itch, which is the disease that horses get in their mane and tail. So his mane was all sort of spiky like a Mohican. And then he had brown ears and he had pink skin. So he had to have sun cream on his nose and around his eyes, because if he was in, you know, really bright sunlight like today, he'd get a bit of sunburn. I adored him.
And you understood each other. I love that it's the ugly pony that you connected with.
Yeah, I think that's true of a lot of young girls. I think, you know, we look for difference and we look for something that I don't know what it, you know, whether this is just a deeply human instinct. We are, from a very young age, looking for unconditional love. We're looking, in many ways, you know, caring for animals and being around pets. You have to be disciplined because you've got to get up early in the morning and either muck them out or feed them or groom them or whatever, walk the dog. You want companionship, you want warmth, and you want freedom. And riding for me was freedom. I mean, it that's when I was galloping free, jumping fences, that thrill of flying, and then ultimately riding in races and getting the huge adrenaline buzz of going for a gap, you know, or timing your run perfectly. And, you know, if you get it right, huge roar from the crowd. If you get it wrong, you have some punter shouting at you, "You try harder next time, Claire."
And riding was also very much in the family. Talk about where you grew up, Park House Stables. It was originally in the family through your mother's family. Your father comes over from the U.S. to help work after your grandfather passes away. What was it like, the estate?
Oh, my brother still lives there. My brother and sister-in-law are there with their kids. And my brother's now training about 180 horses. I mean, he has a much bigger, he's built new yards and all sorts. But it's right on the edge of Watership Down. If you've ever read the book Watership Down about the rabbits, there's a point at which the rabbits go on to the gallops and they hear this thundering of hooves. And those are our gallops. And you're talking about big downland turf. So these hills rise up from the landscape like in the early morning light, they kind of look like blue whales. You know, this wonderful blue tinge to the light. And on misty mornings, you're standing on the downs and you hear the horses coming before you can see them. So it's incredibly magical and atmospheric and a very British scene, because downs are, you know, downland. I don't know whether you have mountain ranges here, but do you have downs? I'm not sure. They're really soft, curving hills. They're not very high.
I'm from West Virginia, so
you,
we have
you
those.
Do.
We don't
well,
call
then,
them. We just
what
call
do you
them
call
hills.
Them? You call them hills. And they're long?
Yeah, ridges, long ridge lines.
And you could gallop along the top of them?
Not so much.
No? So they're sort of more mounds, are they? This is kind of long and low. And so you can gallop for a mile, 2 miles on the downs. And the turf is really springy because it's been there for thousands of years and it's never been ploughed.
So you describe this very idyllic landscape. And then the story you tell in your book is you're just sort of clumsily sort of making your way through. A bit of an outcast is how you describe yourself. For example, there's a story of when Queen Elizabeth came by.
Oh, yes.
And talk about how old you were and what you did.
The Queen, the Queen, my father trained for the Queen, and my brother still does. And actually, I've just been filming a documentary on the Queen and horses and spent most of last week filming with the Queen. And hopefully, I'm hoping that'll come over here. It'll go out in England at the end of May, and I hope it'll come over to BBC America. So the Queen knows an awful lot about horses, and she has bred horses since she took them over from her father. So she's been breeding horses now for 60 years, for as long as she's been on the throne. And she had maybe 5 or 6 horses with my dad, and would come around about April every year. She'd go around her trainers and see the horses. And my father had forgotten to tell us that she was coming. So I've been out riding my horse, and I come running into the house, and there's 2 men sitting at the kitchen table. And I don't really recognise them, and I don't really clock that that's the detective and the driver, and therefore, you know, the Queen's about. And I haven't seen a car or anything. I come flying through. Oh, great, cooked breakfast. Fantastic. Mum's making an effort. And that breakfast's not in the kitchen. It's going to be in the dining room. So I go crashing through the dining room door, fall over through the door. I'm wearing my scruffy jumpers and my odd socks and a very dirty rugby shirt and a spotted handkerchief around my neck. And there's the Queen sitting at the head of the table. And the trouble is, if you kind of miss your moment to curtsy and say, Your Majesty, you can't really get it in later. So I just went, okay, sausages, yummy. Oh, there's the Queen. Go get your sausages, sit down. And I'd been over here to America to see family. And we still have quite a lot of family in America. I'd met up with my uncle today, actually. But there is a thing, and I don't know whether you've ever done this, but it seemed to me a fantastic American delicacy of sausages on toast with marmalade.
Uh-huh.
Do you do that?
Yeah.
Yes, right. But you have to cut the sausage long ways. And cutting a sausage long ways when you're nervous and when the Queen's sitting at the head of the table, it's quite difficult because that sausage can be a slippery little sucker. And it's a bit like trying to hold a bar of soap. And like the harder you hold it, the more likely it is to shoot out of your hand and across the table towards the Queen, which is what happened.
Which is what happened.
And then I grasped it and knocked over the milk. I mean, it was all dreadful. But it's you are in those moments, and everyone will know this, not necessarily the Queen sitting in your house, but everyone will know those moments when you're trying so hard to behave are the moments when you let yourself down.
What I thought was so interesting about when you described that story is it wasn't so much like, oh my goodness, I have shot a sausage across the table towards the Queen. It was more, what kind of wrath will I face from my parents when the Queen finally leaves, because it was a very contained reaction at the time.
Exactly.
So you grew up in a time when expectations around what was proper for women was very much changing rapidly
not changing rapidly enough in my family.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a great quote where you declare to your grandmother, I'm having a nervous breakdown, and she says, we are not the sort of people that have nervous breakdowns. Yes. And she just moves on.
If my grandmother, who died a couple of years ago, and maybe I would never have written the book if grandma was still around and sort of compos mentis and I thought that she was going to read it. But my grandmother was very much like, if you think of the Maggie Smith character in Downton Abbey, the Dowager, she liked that. You know, when grandma walked into a room, you almost curtsied. I mean, she was very severe and she was very unemotional. And if you went to a funeral, even of somebody you really cared about, you would not cry. You know, you would not cry. It was all about maintaining a proper composure. So she did not think that women, you know, of a certain status should work. She didn't let my mother go to university because she said, I will not have a blue stocking for a daughter. And my mum's only 64 now. So that, you know, she's not that old. Her friends were going to university and she was perfectly capable, but was told that she wasn't meant to. And I don't, you know, my grandmother's attitude to me was somewhat, you know, it was strange. And when I came out, and there was quite a lot of coverage in the papers at home and quite a lot of intrusive coverage, my mother said to me, you have to go and talk to grandma. And I thought, oh, no, don't make me. You know, like nothing is worse than talking to grandma about, why would I talk to grandma about being gay? So I go over there and I took my dog. She really loves my dog or loved my dog. And take the dog over because that'll be fine. So Archie runs in and goes and says hello to Grandma, and I sit and say hello to Grandma, and I say, so have you seen the papers? And I said, and she said, yes. I said, and what do you think? She said, I think it's disgusting. And I said, what, the invasion of my privacy or me being gay? And she said, both. And that was it. And we didn't speak for quite a while after that. Not that Grandma probably noticed, but I sort of just avoided her for the next, you know, 6 months or so until it was Christmas. And then Alice, my partner, was there at Christmas with her parents. And we had to sort of gently dance around the whole Grandma issue and kind of just get on with it.
I'm speaking to Claire Balding, author of My Animals and Other Family. And I find that contrast very interesting, that your grandmother is very stiff upper lip. There's certain emotions you just do not express. And then you talk about growing up among animals where you just see the full spectrum of suffering and joy. And you're riding a horse as a child as it dies underneath you. Mm. Have you thought about, I mean, that contrast is so interesting to me, what you learned from the animals about life versus what you were able to sort of express with permission.
I think, and I don't know whether this is a peculiarly British thing or whether it's true of some people in other countries as well. I think the background that I come from and the type of people that my family are, they find it much easier to express emotion either with or about animals than they do with human beings. And my father would probably say to you that he's more comfortable around animals than he is with people. You know, he was a racehorse trainer because he loved horses. He didn't massively like people. So actually, my brother is much better suited to having lots and lots of owners. Dad only had a few owners who had a lot of horses. So Paul Mellon was one of them, and he trained this horse called Mill Reef, who won the Derby and the Eclipse and the King George and the Ark all in 1971. You say to my father what happened in 1971, he'll reel off all of that. And you say, anything else happen? And he goes, did anything else happen? I said, well, I was born that year and I was your first child. And then you say, what happened in 1972? And he'll start getting really emotional and he'll start to choke up and cry because what he associates with 1972 is Mill Reef broke his leg on the gallops. Mm. And he was saved. An American vet came over, put his leg in plaster, saved him not to race again, but to become a stallion. And he was a very successful stallion. And Dad will get all emotional about that. And then you say, anything else happened in 1972? And I swear to God, he looked at me and he went, was your brother born that year? I said, yes, Dad. Andrew. So we just didn't register. And part of the funny thing about writing the book, I was really worried about what Dad would think, because it's very honest about him and his lack of involvement with us. But he's sort of like a chaotic hero. Every time he appears in the book, you know something crazy is going to happen. You know, he's going to tie the sleds to the back of the truck and take us up in the snow on the, you know, on the downs, which he did with my nephews just the other weekend. So it's not like, you know, he still thinks that's a great idea. Tie it to the back of the truck, it'd be great. But he actually really loved the book. And he, you know, it's the way he was. He doesn't actually see anything wrong with it. And some of the things he said, I think, are a bit ouch. You know, oh, did I really say that? You know, but I'm very proud of you now. That kind of thing goes on. But I just think we did relate through animals. And my mother will still have a conversation with the dog in front of me to tell me something she wants to tell me.
Well, how interesting. You started this conversation by talking about how you don't like to talk about yourself. And so you wrote a book through the story of your animals. So it's a tradition you're carrying on proudly.
Yes, indeed.
I've been speaking with Claire Balding about her memoir, My Animals and Other Family, and what it was like growing up on her father's farm with more than 100 horses. It's published by the Penguin Press. Claire, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Anna.